Podcast presented to you by Entropy Studios. This podcast aims to unlock the mysteries of life by finding signal through the noise, to broaden your horizons and explore fascinating challenges of existence. In this episode, we have Eben Thomas Arbino. Thank you so much for getting on. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about like who you are, where you like what you're doing, what your interests are.
So my name is Eben. I am 24 years old, about to be 25. I am currently a quality engineer at PricewaterhouseCoopers in downtown Dallas. But besides my day job, everything else after my 9-to-5 includes photography, dance, music production, mixing, reading comic books, manga, just a lot of consumption, honestly.
Oh, that's awesome. There's so many different interests. Let's just like dive into more like what got you interested into dance. Let's go there for a moment.
Yeah. So growing up, a lot of my cousins, all female, they all danced. They did classical or they did dancing just to showcase like some sort of talent. They either danced or sang. I never did anything. I actually was only good at school. And I think around the time that we came to America, one of the first few things that I saw on TV was MTV's America's Best Dance Group. And seeing that really made me interested in dance, not as like a performer, but more as a spectator. I just love to watch people dance and express themselves. I thought it was really cool. The way the stunts that they were doing, the speed at which the choreography was, all of that stuff was really interesting. So I would say from about first grade to now, I watch dance videos like every single day. When I started dancing, it was probably around high school, around sophomore year of high school. I joined this club called Dancing for a Cause, DFC for short. And there was a bunch of DFC clubs at Hebron, at Plano, Shepton, just a bunch in Texas. And that was kind of my entryway into learning about dance. Before, I would kind of just watch and just consume it. I would Google what some of these dances were. But fast forward to my high school sophomore year, I tried choreography for the first time. I was really bad at it, so I stopped doing choreography and kind of focused on freestyle. Mm-hmm. And this one dude that was in DFC, he did this style called flexing or bone breaking. And that was the style that I wanted to do, because what it is it's basically yoga mixed with contortion. And I saw the kind of reaction he elicited from like a lot of people when performing. Everyone would be like, whoa, like, that's crazy. Like, and I thought it was super unique because, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people that can do choreography, but not a lot of people that can really push their physical limits past that to doing stuff like stunts or, you know, contortion. So I was like, okay, you know what? I want to push myself and like do something unique. So I kind of focused on bone breaking and contortion for like the remaining 2 years of high school. Just learned a lot about dance and about the street dance community and about the hip hop culture within that community, which was honestly, I think that got me through high school. I think as, you know, brown kids were always pushed to perform and do really well in our studies and things like that. Growing up, I love the fact that a lot of other people had creative outlets. A lot of my friends and a lot of people that I danced alongside, they were dancing since they were like kids. And there were a few people that started dancing in high school, just like me. So it was kind of nice because you had people that are, you know, really experienced and really good at their craft, walking people like me who are new and, you know, want to learn through the whole process and introducing us to this whole sense of community. I think like growing up, I did have a community in church. But not many dancers were at our church, and it wasn't really something that was readily available. It was every week. It was like two or three times every week. And we would meet just to dance for fun. We'd meet every day if we had a pep rally to perform at, things like that. And then fast forwarding, I kind of took everything that I learned from DFC and applied it in college when I had tried out for an Indian dance team called Sharara and Chalak. So that was kind of my entryway into like the whole Desi Dance Network and like that whole community in college. But I've always loved dance since I was a kid. Like I said, I think it's even me what I'm doing right now. I make a lot of hand gestures. I'm very animated. So I think that part of my personality also translates into dance. And that's why I love it. I think it's a really good way for me to express myself. It's a great outlet. And on top of all that, it's exercise. So it's honestly the only exercise I can do. I suck at work. I suck at sports. I literally suck at everything. I suck at dancing too, but that's like something I can like.
Oh, you're doing, what are you saying?
It's getting there. We'll be a professional eventually. We'll see.
Hey, no, like a little bit of my story too, because I can really like, especially in India, I only knew like go to school, come back and just play games because like these are the other kids, they're playing the same games. So I was like, yeah. You know, that's all you do. And then only when I like moved to America, I came to Oklahoma first, and that people were like, what do you like to do? And I was like, what do you mean? What do I like to do? I don't know what you mean. So it was something first time I had to discover like, oh, you can be interested in unique things that no one else might be or somewhere in the other side of the world, but you got to try it out and find it for yourself. So it was kind of like, it's not just what everyone tells you to do. You can choose for yourself. Like, I want to try this and get better, even though you don't know it. I like went to a dance camp when I was like 7 or something. And it was because I was forced. Like, I was scared of dancing. People would be like,
okay. Why were you like, were their parents kind of just like make you try a bunch of different things? Or like,
yeah. So I actually lived with my aunt because my parents were just working. So they were like, daycares in India were not good at all. So they were like, we're not going to put you in daycare. So my grandma and my aunt, I stayed with them for like 8-9 years when I was younger. So my parents would just come visit me. So I didn't stay with them when I was like younger, usually. So they were my parents. My grandma and my aunt were like my mom and dad pretty much also at the same time.
Right.
So they were like, yo, you know, dance. And at weddings, I'd be just like, don't make me dance. Like, this is going to be bad. People are going to laugh at me. So they forced me to do this Sean McDowell dance camp. And I did that. And I was like, okay, this is good and all. But I still felt like, oh my God, I'm never doing that again. And then it fast forward to like college, which was finally, I was like, you know what? Either I'm going to be scared of dancing forever. Because I was like, I don't like, I like it, but I've never like learned it or really tried to even get better at it. And so I was like, college, it is it. Like, I don't care if I make the team or not. I'm going to give it a shot. And then thankfully I made it. So I was like, all right, now we're in it. Now we can get better. And then 4 years later, now I'm like, okay, dance is really fun.
Yeah, that's good. When you were growing up and stuff, like, did you ever like consume dance? Like, did you ever watch it a lot? Or did you kind of just like push it away after a little bit because you were like, man, like, I don't want anything to do with this? Because that's how I felt about like a bunch of other things that my parents wanted me to try.
I had, I only saw like Bollywood dance, right? So I was like, okay, this is movies. And so I was like, okay, this is whatever. And then I would see, I think it was like Hrithik Roshan dancing. And I was like, this looks good. Whatever he's doing, somehow if somebody can teach me this or something even close to it, that's like, okay. And that was like only in like rare moments, right? So it was like all outlier data points, I guess I saw. And then finally I came here and I saw like hip hop circuits, different circuits here, all that. And I was like, oh, whoa, there's like a whole world I don't even know that exists right now.
Yeah.
And then finally, and like, I got to learn at least just a base level, you know?
Yeah. Do you think in college, it was like the biggest challenge was like just, you know, stepping out of your comfort zone? What scared you the most about, I would say, like being on like a new team? Because I had a lot of like anxieties and then my own worries with joining like an actual team. I was always just a one man or two man show. I never actually danced alongside a team or any of the other stuff. Like, it was just, yeah, I just go on stage, I, you know, break my bones and that's it. I became, it was never controlled. It was never like you have to do choreography this much. Like, what was that like for you, kind of just getting like thrown into all that?
Literally the summer of, I didn't even know about the team. Only like first week before school started, I was like, there's a dance team and there's a whole dance circuit, which I was like, what? So then I decided, you know, either I could just do the same old I've been doing, or I was like, what would the opposite version of me do? So then I decided, let's pick one thing. And I was like, okay, dance. I would never actually like join a team. And I was like, huh, let me be the opposite of me, because it's college.
Yeah.
Really knows. There's only some people from like high school. That's fine, whatever. Like, there's thousands of other people. So then I was like, I'm just going to go for it. And even walking up the stairs, I was like, I can just turn around right now. No one would know. Like, nothing would ever happen. But I was like, you know what? It's okay. They might laugh at me, or like, I'm just going to laugh at myself. Because then if people laugh at me, hey, at least I was first. So I was like, all right, okay, there's hope.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the biggest things that I struggled with too, because I always thought that you need to have some sort of talent to dance, like, or you need to have a sense of rhythm. I never had a sense of rhythm. Like, growing up, I watched a lot of Mollywood movies, like Malayalam movies and stuff. So Bollywood wasn't actually like a big thing for me until high school. That's when I started becoming friends with, I guess, like more brown people and a lot of, I guess, like Northern Indian people and even some South Indians that I've met. They all are into Bollywood. So they started showing me these movies and stuff. In Mollywood, they have dancing that's like to influence is folk dance and a lot of other stuff. But I would say now it's probably the same. But back then, 10, 15 years ago, Bollywood was like, they were churning out a bunch of stuff. Shimmick Dalmer being actually one of the most iconic people in Bollywood. I had no idea who Shimmick Dalmer was until like college. So that's how like, I guess, uncultured I was. But he is like considered the father of like contemporary Indian dance. And like, he's really cool. And he even like, a lot of people that have trained under him and even like influenced by him or actually in our DDN community too, which is insane. Like there's these training camps are everywhere, which again, like growing up in Kerala, like I don't ever remember having access to anything like this. But in America, even if it's not Shimmick Dalmer, there's studios that are like really knowledgeable, reputable, or even studios that have choreographers that have like, you know, traveled or worked with celebrities. There's a few here that I've been privileged to, you know, like either teach at or learn from the people that run these studios, which is really nice. I think like the biggest takeaway for me in terms of like collegiate dance has definitely been it teaches you how to work with people and how to essentially like, I guess, work with people from a bunch of different backgrounds, cultures. I think it prepared me for my actual job. I think like being part of a team, being part of a community, like I said before, I had a community with church, but with church, we kind of just focused on prayer and, you know, getting through life as like a Christian, how to influence others to kind of come to the church, things like that. And obviously in college, I think a lot of my religious stuff was questioned. I became more spiritual, less religious. I stopped going to church as much, focused more on what I needed in terms of, you know, like for my health, I want to look at this. I want to look at this. I want to explore this. And dance was like definitely a big thing. I think dance opened a lot of outlets for me in terms of mixing. I got into mixing because of dance. I got into choreography because of dance. Just, I could go on and on about it. But yeah, I think those initial fears that I had, like I relate to you a lot when, you know, you say like, yeah, no one would know if I just quit or if I just, you know, like walked away. Joining an Indian dance team specifically was like a very big thing for me just because I don't think I was that in tune with my culture. I was very invested in the street dance community though, because that's what I watched.
Yeah.
I barely watched Bollywood movies, barely watched Indian teams. So one of my chachis at church, one of the older people at church, she was saying like, hey, UT has a really big dense brown population. We have a lot of teams. You should really try out for both. And, you know, I'm on Chala. Like, here's a video of us. I remember the first time I looked at these videos, I was like, yeah, like key y'all suck. But the funny part was, despite like the dancing not being up to par compared to like the street dance community, it was more so about the expression, the character, and honestly, as corny as it is, like the vibe. I think within our community, it's really cool that we have competitions at other schools and like everyone throws these different competitions. The hip hop community and street dance community have that too, but not on the same level as us. Like we have our national comp now.
Right.
We have Legend BA, or we had BA. And it's a lot of these comps, there's no bid comps for WAD. A long time ago, they did something like that where they had bid comps, like the first place team at each city, they all go to World of Dance finals, like stuff like that. But things like that are really hard to organize nowadays. And I think that's like the plus side of our community is for people that are new to dance, I think it's a really, really good outlet. That's honestly why I even picked joining an Indian dance team. There's a lot of hip hop teams and street dance teams in Dallas as well, but a lot of their practice hours were kind of crazy. And a lot of the people that were already on the team had some sort of established rep or, you know, they had experience in dance. So I was like, you know what? Like, you know, maybe I should get out of my comfort zone and just try it because I don't do choreography. Like, how am I going to sit here and say that they suck and I've, you know, I tried to do this? Like, I'm just saying it sucks based off what I've seen in an entire life.
Yeah.
When I put myself in it, I was like, man, I suck. Like, there's so much I had to learn. You know, it's not just expression. It's not just moving your body at a specific way. There's formations, you know, there's awareness of the other 20 people that you're dancing with and like all this other stuff. So I think like for foundations and, you know, just that gateway to dance, like this was probably one of the best ways to kind of get into it. And that made me invested in other teams. I ended up joining a street dance team right after, ended up joining like a Bhangra team. And this like opened up a lot of pathways for me and a lot of opportunity for me. So I'm very grateful.
Did that kind of also lead to you wanting to like get into mixing and other stuff as well?
Oh yeah. I think the mixing story is pretty funny because we had a DJ on Ruftar, and Ruftar is one of the dance teams that I was fortunate to be on. And one of our DJs, he was going to retire. He was like, hey, I mixed for way too many teams. I'm burnt out. So next year, I think like, you know, that's going to be the last time I mix. And I asked him, I'm like, hey, you know, is this something that you think I can learn? Like, I'm not musically trained at all. Any experience with music besides dancing? I barely have rhythm. And I was telling him, like, I barely know how to dance, bro. But he actually walked me through how all this stuff works. He walked me through like basic music theory. And he was like, if you do this for your team, you can save them a crap ton of money. And mixes are very expensive. Like each team pays anywhere from $250 starting to up to $600, $700, even more. There's DJs that charge like $700, $800. And knowing how to do this and compile a mix is like, it's so crucial because not only are you just saving your team like money, but you know, when you have gigs or wedding mixes or, you know, these small performances on the side and someone needs to just splice, you know, songs together, having someone on the team that knows how to do that is like, it's so beneficial because you don't have to outsource it. You don't have to pay. It's like when we do business and you have to outsource a certain type of service, right? It's like, yeah. It's always cheap if someone on the team knows how to actually do it. And I also just really loved music. So whenever me and the DJ would work together, I would always ask him like, hey, does this song work with this song? And being part of that Indian community, it made me really into Punjabi music and Bollywood music. And so I would listen to a lot of Punjabi music and ask our DJ, hey, does this work together? And he'd say, yes, it does. Okay. And I was like, okay, how can we build off this? Hey, can you add this sound effect? Can you add this transformer sound effect? And so it's funny because in a lot of our mixes, there's a lot of things from my childhood that I liked or things from popular culture that I resonated with that I kind of just sprinkle in there. And obviously it's hype, but it's really nice knowing in the background, like, oh, I made this, but at the same time I made this because like I'm fucked with this, not because, you know, it's just hype. So it's like the plus side. And I think like it's definitely grown. I haven't mixed in a while, but when I was, I guess at my peak for mixing, doing a lot, the one thing that I liked was finding that certain songs work together, and when you combine them and mash them up, layering the songs on top of each other, when they harmonize or when they sync, it's like such a nice feeling. I think you spend hours kind of just thinking about, you know, does this song work with this song? It's a lot of plug and chug, a lot of checking. You have to train yourself to know if a mix is off key, which I'm still not even that good at. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm still learning even now. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, dance opened this door for me, and then mixing also was a direct result of dance. And I'm super grateful for that as well.
Yeah, it's like adding on layer. Because my brother has actually learned to mix now because he's captain now. So he has to deal with all the DJs, all the logistics and choreo stuff. So he's like, man, Pink and Juice is a lot. Like, understand, like, you know, they also got to like get their gigs and stuff. But I was like, yeah, learn this. So he's learning how to mix just so they can save some money next season or something.
Yeah. It's such a, like, a crucial skill. And even if, you know, you don't take that, even if you take it outside of dance, like, I feel like there's always people that need, like, wedding mixes or graduating mixes, you know? And I remember being in high school, and a lot of my friends had grad parties, and they were trying to, like, learn how to do all this stuff on, like, Audacity and, like, all this stuff, like, last minute. But, I mean, it's definitely stuff you can carry outside of dance as well. But, yeah. That's awesome. Is your brother captain for AUK or what?
He's on UMKC in Chakras.
Oh, he's in Kansas. Snap. So, how far down that rabbit hole is he right now? Like, is he learning about music theory, or like, is he like just learning
I
as he
guess
goes?
I think he's like a month or two in now that he's like, all right, I'm gonna learn this for like 60 days, see if I actually learn something, or and then he'll see like continue or like try something else.
That's good. When I first started, like, I had no goals. I think, like, yeah, I literally was like, I don't even know if I could do this. And I think it took me so long just to even get like one thing out. But I feel like once you learn the fundamentals, that's when you start, like, you really start turning out content.
That's what happened to me because I would hear songs during our mix. I'm like, I know a better song that could easily go with it. And I was just like, I was already overwhelmed by like, gotta do college stuff, gotta do, because I was doing pre-med at the time. So I was like, gotta do pre-med stuff and then gotta learn dance because I have zero skill and everybody else is more skilled. So at least I gotta keep up to be on this team, you know? So I was like, I'll learn this later. So I would give the ideas, but never like try it myself. And so finally, this year or like end of last year, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna get a DJ console and try to see like, so I've always wanted to just do because I can somehow tell at times. So I'm like, oh, I know a perfect song that just goes with this. And I was like, does nobody else think? They're like, oh, we don't know. And I was like, maybe I try. So I got this and I just do that for fun. But it's fun because like I mixed a Calvin Harris song with Rihanna and it goes, I'm like, okay, this sounds fun. So, and I don't want to do it because usually I would do a lot of things. I was getting to like, oh, how do I make money from this? Well, that's good and all, right? But I just wanted to keep this for now, at least just do it for fun. Whenever I'm like, I need some break, I just get on the console and like, okay, let's try making some mixes, just mix it up, see what's happening. Or just
Yeah,
like a
there's a
cool
good.
playlist for a party. Yeah, so it's been fun. And now I can like tell other people too, because like, okay, it's not actually that hard that once you try it, you can tell like a lot of the skills if you pick those up. The rest is like the additional details to add on it.
Yeah, I think like production is definitely something that I don't really know much about. Mashups, I would say, is easier than like making your own beats from scratch. One of my friends, Aranya, he goes by Bass Doctor. He does a phenomenal job at making his own sound and like having that like uniqueness, right? Versus with a lot of like, I would say, like producers in our community, we kind of just mash things up. Where most DJs are like party DJs, right? Where we kind of just transition songs from song to song and like things like that. I think like DJing itself, I've actually never dabbled in DJing, like, DJing at a party or like DJing live. I've like literally never done any of that. Everything that I have done has been like programmed by my head. Nothing live. It's something I've always thought about. The guy that taught me how to do it, he DJs lives a lot. Like he DJs live a lot. So he like gets flown out to after parties and he'll just be mixing live for like 3, 4 hours straight. And it takes me 3, 4 hours to come up with like a mashup, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, wow, like he obviously there's a little bit of pre-planning and stuff too, but sometimes like they come up with things on the spot. I'm just like, dang, like I would love to pick their brain and see how that works.
Yeah, recently like I didn't get the headphones because you know like you would listen to one and pre-mix it and then play. Yeah, so I didn't have that because I was like, bro, I'm not even super serious. I'm just dabbling in this. So I would just get it's good I didn't do it earlier because now I just did like, okay, I can hear it and it's coming and mixing because I can already tell like heard the song before, I can mix. But now I got the headphones and I'm like, okay, this is a whole new game because it's like this
There's
is
a
what you're
whole new
playing
world.
and I'm hearing it and I
Your
was like, okay,
perspective,
it
yeah.
sucks.
They just sound completely changed when I like headphones in.
And I would take it off and I was like, there's only I can until like I send it out to the world. It's insane.
And I think like we're both very technical. Like we're nerdy when it comes to like, knowing about the technical specifications of things. And I think once I started mixing, I started looking into like sound, like that concept of sound and like all the technical like things regarding sound. Like, when you equalize, you have to pay attention to like the low end, the high ends, the bass, the hi-hats, all these like frequencies and like waves and all this stuff, right? And then like it gave me a completely different like perception of music, I would say. Like those 4 years I was like mixing in college and like dabbling around with that, coming out of it now when I listen to a song on the radio, I'm like, oh, there's like, this song is only a few keys. It's like a really simple song. This could be mashed up with another song like this. Like, it helps you draw a lot of connections and like create these relationships between like songs that you wouldn't really think about if, you know, you just normally listen to music, I would say.
That's exciting. Yeah, I know you had a chance to go to India for a month. What is it, Kerala, right?
Kerala.
Yeah, how was that experience when sharing about that?
It was good. It was definitely difficult, but I think being able to reconnect with my family and with a lot of people and with the environment that I grew up in, I think that was definitely like the biggest thing. We actually, oh my God, the flight was so freaking long. It's not like we didn't take a direct flight because the flights are so expensive. So we ended up flying from Dallas to, I think, Chicago, then from Chicago to Dubai, then Dubai to, or no, Chicago to Frankfurt, Germany, then Frankfurt to Dubai, then Dubai to Kochi. Then we drove 3 to 4 hours to Ammaynur, which is like on the outside of Kottayam, which is like a major city in Kerala. Yeah, so it was just like a lot of logistics. And the flight was pretty nice from Dubai to India. Like airlines there, they do such a phenomenal job of giving you like really good food. And even like flying economy in those airlines, like you feel like you're flying like first in American. So that's nice. I think like I definitely forgot what the airline experience was like too. So like, you know, they give you like these packages of like warm towels at the end of your flight. Just like a lot of these like little things that just make your day. I don't know how to explain it, but yeah. When we landed, I think the biggest thing that we had to adjust to was like the place where we stayed. So we stayed with our uncle, and he's like really traditional, old-fashioned type of dude. Like our whole family is there. And I would say that like when we he actually he has a two-story house, and he built another floor at the top for all of our cousins that visit. So I'm actually not the only person that's outside India right now. My whole family, like in terms of all my cousins, they're all like everywhere. Like we have family in London, we have family in Dubai, Abu Dhabi,
That's so
Bahrain.
cool.
Yeah, they're everywhere, dude. And we actually got so we stayed with my cousin when we were in Dubai. We stayed in Abu Dhabi, and then we had another cousin in Al Ain, and they're there for work and stuff. So it's pretty cool. Like we get to stay with them, explore like different cultures. But anyways, bringing it back to staying with my uncle. My uncle, he kind of lives as if like nothing has changed. Like it's funny because that's what's comfortable for him, right? Like he has grown up his whole life living a certain way, and he sees the westernization happen. But the crazy thing is like the westernization, I see it happen more in the city and not specifically like where we live. Maybe that's because of like how the infrastructure is set up, or like, you know, the difficulty of even getting to our like the area that we live in. And we used to have like bus stops, fighting for bus stops that would take people from the city to where we live. And when I went, my dad mentioned that none of those bus stops like are working since COVID. Like they stopped bringing people in and taking people out since COVID. So that's something they're trying to like, I guess, like bring back. But yeah, like there we didn't have any. We had an AC room. Our uncle was like, yeah, it's for you Americans, if you Westernized people. We'll make like an AC room and stuff. And even how the AC works, it was like a little different. Like it's like an exposed air conditioner that you can see. You like directly feel it. There's no like HVAC system in it, right? Because they were built a long time ago when we didn't have those things. Like I remember as a kid, like I didn't know what AC was until I don't even know. It was like a year. We only got AC when we went on trains. And even then, like we always thought that only rich people went into the AC unit on the train rides and stuff. So we never really like explored it. But yeah, I mean, weather was one thing. I think the weather did wonders for my skin, my hair. Like I barely had to use like moisturizer when I was there, which was really nice. It was really humid. And I think like I like humid and hot weather a lot more than I like the cold. I hate dry heat. That's the worst. When I was in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, oh man, you can like feel the moisture just get like sucked out of your face. It's insane. But I was sweating every day. My brother, he grew up in America, so he had a harder time adjusting to like the food. I grew up eating that kind of food, and I love it. Like I love eating when I'm in India, just because it's food that I can't really get here, right? Like nothing beats Indian parotta and beef, and like just like the curry that you get. Everything is freshly made. I think that's like the biggest thing. I really like the fact that everything was just cooked and presented freshly versus here, you know what I'm saying? They'll just toss a McChicken in the microwave and they're like, and obviously it's a lot unhealthier, but we had to be careful with where we ate. That was also another thing, especially in Kerala. There's a lot of restaurants that fake reviews, and a lot of people get food poisoning. There's people that have actually died from eating like certain kinds of food in Kerala that my mom was telling me about. And so we only ate at like two spots. There's this hotel called Hotel Kottayam Grand. We stayed there. That place is amazing. It's literally like almost like a five-star hotel. Just west is super westernized, really good food, huge menu. And then we ate at this other place called Hotel Ida. And both of these places, if you look them up, they have like good reviews and stuff. But how we kind of knew that these were safe to eat at is through word of mouth. And that's, again, it comes back down to that sense of community, right? It's like if a bunch of people eat at this one spot, everyone's going to know about it, especially like in Kottayam and Ammayanur, like everyone talks. So I'm pretty grateful that we were able to like find spots that, you know, we could eat consistently at. I think like the worst part was all the bugs, getting used to being okay with bugs being everywhere. That's like definitely something I think not a lot of Americans are presented with, unless, you know, you live next to a lake, you go hiking all the time, you're very outdoorsy. But growing up, I wasn't really that outdoorsy. Like I would, you know, stay in, be on my computer, on my phone, and like my brother's the same way. So, and I think the other thing is there's no, again, there's no like HVAC system. There's no like ventilation. Sometimes it's just exposed. Like your room could literally just be exposed to the outside through like slits at the top to let air in because it gets so hot there. And so in the middle of the night, it made me more mindful about my phone and my laptop usage, because at night, you know how like normally with us, you know, like we'll be scrolling through TikTok or scrolling through our feed in the middle of the night, you know, just laid down, just scrolling.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Every single time I did that in the middle of the night in India, I would just see a bug just like pop up on my phone, just like land right on my phone. And I was like, oh my God. And I would get frustrated. I'm like, why am I getting mad? Because, you know, this is normal, because, you know, back in America, bugs are drawn to light. Mm-hmm. If there's a giant light where there's nothing else anywhere else, like all the lights are off and then it's a giant light, of course, I'm going to attract a lot of bugs, right? And it actually made me more mindful about my phone usage at night too. And I would remember like, okay, you know what? I just need to turn my phone off and leave it away. Problem solved. And then I adapted within like the first like 2 days. And it was pretty nice. Like I got used to the environment. I got used to like the weather, the food. I think the other part was just not being able to go into the city whenever I wanted to. That was tough. And even Ubers were pretty scarce where we are. And auto rickshaws were also scarce where we are because they're usually all in the city. So we had to either hire drivers. I had to wait for my parents to come back to hire a driver or like things like that. And thankfully, I think the westernized aspect of it was really nice because, you know, we have internet at my house now, which is like amazing. Like we did not have internet last time. We had to use our phone plans in order to talk to people. And the downside is like, we still experience really heavy rain, and that causes power outages everywhere. And not just for us, but like literally everybody in where we live. Like it caused issues with the phone. Like sometimes the phone connection would go down too because of the rain. And you can't really do anything about that just because, like, you know, you're a part of the world where there's not really, really good top of the line infrastructure. You know, it's stuff that's put in that you're working on over time. And you can see that with the roads, you can see that with the houses. When I grew up there, like we barely had like a fresh road. And I remember a few years later down the line, I like physically remember when they put a fresh charred road. I remember when they put power lines where we live. Like that's the crazy part. It's like there's a lot of people in like Hyderabad, and like I feel like there's like cities, full-on cities in the northern parts of India that have been worked on for years and years. And like I see when things are almost like founded in my area, which is pretty cool. I think what else?
No, that one story, because you were like having the AC and all that, and you know, all like the specific thing, I was like, bro, I can relate to this experience so well. Because my brother, he was born in
you.
He was born in India, but he only lived for like 2-3 years before he came to America. So he was more like, his stomach can't handle all the food. He'll eat it, but he's like, yeah, I gotta go. Me, I live there, so every time I go, I'm like, don't worry, my body's okay with this. You just gotta go straight for the street food, and I'm like, yes. And the flavor is so much better. Like here, it's good and all, but once you actually go back and have that food again, you're like, yeah, I've been just like misguided in thinking I was having great food.
Yeah, just being able to get fresh food especially for a good price. That was like the other thing is like, obviously, like since we're making like American dollars and stuff, like the American dollar's worth more than the Indian currency that would be. So a lot of the meals that we were buying, like usually when we travel abroad or when we even visit like a domestic city in the US, we're dropping so much money, man, like on food, on like just basic things that should not be that expensive, right? It's like if you go to California, you're gonna get 3 tacos for $20, right? In Texas, you get like 5 for $20. It's like, it's all varied, but in India, it's really nice because like no matter where we went, everyone was able to eat like some good food. And it's all food that we would eat at home, obviously. But the best part is like, sometimes like you pay for the experience of being in a nicer hotel, things like that. My brother, we had to figure out what to eat for him a lot, just because like spicy food's like a tough thing for him too. Like just like your siblings too, his stomach was upset all the time, things like that. His stomach was upset all the time. So adjusting to that and finding non-Indian food was really hard. Even the hotel that we went to, they offered like some Chinese, Indo-Chinese food.
Yeah. But
I don't think there was like a single spot. They had like KFC, Pizza Hut, right? But like none of these places are, if you think these places are like good, or they're already not good in America, so like just imagine like the level of cleanliness and the standard that they have in like areas where, you know, there's less strict rules for food and like things like that. And we were always told, you know, don't even like look at street food, don't even like look at fast food places, like things like that. So food was definitely like a really big issue. Also translates into like how thin my brother and I am, which I'll get to that. But yeah, like family, I'm sure you probably felt like this, like when you visited family in India, they're always like, oh, like, have you been eating? Or, oh, you need to eat more.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like scraping rice, like onto your plate. And then, you know, right when you're finished and you think like, oh, I'm full, suddenly there's another hand pouring rice again on your plate, right? That's just crazy, man. I think like, for me, it was nice because, obviously, I need to gain weight, but for my brother, it was so hard because, you know, it's like there's only so much rice that we can quickly eat over the span of a month. But yeah,
dude, yeah, when I go to India now, I just have it set like, no, I can't say no. Even if I say no, my grandma's gonna be like, you know, you're gonna eat this. Even if you
no, it's not an option.
Yeah, so
even if you're like, yeah, you can say no, it's you'll see it on your plate. You know what I'm saying? And we're taught not to waste food, so it's like, oh, like we have to eat it, like.
That's so true.
And it's all out of love, which I understand. But at the same time, it's like, again, like I can't eat rice, you know, 3 times a day, every day for the rest of my life. It's maybe it's because I was in America for so long and we're just used to a lot of different variety.
You've been listening to Pure Entropy. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Really means a lot. Appreciate all the time. Take it out of your day to give it a listen. If you'd like to support further, you can do so by leaving us a review on your favorite podcasting platform of choice. See you in the next one.